Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You see, there's a phrase that gets used quite a bit, and you probably know the pattern. Something being something, or something gonna something. You know, like Manny being Manny, Jets gonna jet. And a lot of times it's overused, it's tired, it's played. However, there are times where it's the only way to describe what is happening. And one of those times is when Magic Johnson goes on national television and takes an absolute flamethrower to the organization that he says he loves so much. You know, Magic being Magic. Lakers gonna Laker. And that's the only way to explain what happened yesterday when Irvin went on ESPN. I mean, right when it appeared that things were starting to settle down, Irv went all Irv on their asses all over again, showing up on First Take and crying about Rob Pelinka backstabbing him and talking junk about him, about how he doesn't work hard enough and is never at the office. And no clones, no truth to the rumor that Pelinka went to his plastic surgeon and said, "Give me the Rob Lowe." So stop with that imbecility. Stick to the imbecility that was Irv lighting the franchise that he professes to love so much on fire the day they introduced their new head coach. In other words, welcome to the party, Frank Vogel.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Anyway, back to tragic. This is the same Traj who quit on the Lakers without telling anybody last month. The same Traj who says he loves Jeannie Buss like a sister, but told the media he was quitting before he told her because, well, he's Magic. You know, that's just Magic being Magic. That's just the crap he pulls. And why does he pull that crap? Why did he go on national TV to drop a bomb on the franchise that he says he loves? The same reason anybody does anything at all, because they can. But especially Magic. The Lakers have enabled him to pull this type of crap off the floor for years now. Oh, and lest we forget, he quit one of the most iconic jobs in all of sports, a job that he was not built for, a job that he should have never been given in the first place, and the job with the organization that he allegedly loves like a family. He quit that job so he could tweet congratulations to Russell Westbrook. But not before he said that the Laker plan was working. Remember, LeBron arrived last summer, and the next step was to land another premium free agent this year. So, with free agency about to open up in a few weeks, this is what Magic wants all those free agents to know about the LA Lakers. Starting with, GM Rob Pelinka is a backstabber. There are two other Buss brothers who you probably have never even heard of, but they apparently want more power. GM Rob Pelinka is a backstabber. There are too many cooks in the kitchen. GM Rob Pelinka is a backstabber. The chief operating officer is trying to get too involved in basketball ops. And finally, GM Rob Pelinka is a backstabber. Now, I would read you the quotes from Madge, but as usual, they're just a confusing bunch of word salad. Although this one is pretty clear.
If you're going to talk betrayal, it's only with Rob.
Got it. So the guy who is going on TV and torching his allegedly beloved team on TV is talking about betrayal. That's rich. Now, I'll give Magic this. There are too many cooks in that kitchen, and most of them couldn't even work a microwave. That seems pretty evident. He's right about that. But about that betrayal, apparently Magic was bent that he was hearing things about his work ethic. And he thought that it was coming from Pelinka.
I start hearing, you know, Magic, you're not working hard enough. Magic's not in the office. So people around the Laker office was telling me Rob was saying things, Rob Pelinka, and I didn't like those things being said behind my back, that I wasn't in the office enough and so on and on. I started getting calls from my friends outside of basketball saying those things now were said to them outside of basketball. Now, not just in the Laker office anymore.
So in other words, you didn't walk two doors down the hallway, look the guy in the eye and say, "Hey man, what's up? You got a problem with me? You got something to say to me?" Nope, you just quit. It's hilarious. So you quit because the guy working beneath you said that you weren't working hard enough. So you quit because he said that, or you quit because it wasn't true? Because it absolutely was true. It was not a secret that Magic was not putting in the hours of a typical NBA exec. That was known. That was a fact. Nobody needed Rob Pelinka to say that. I mean, that's like claiming that Rob Pelinka is backstabbing because he says the sun is going to come up tomorrow. And if Pelinka was saying it, it's probably because Traj himself said it. He said that when Jeannie approached him about the job, he even told her, I can't work normal hours.
Listen, I can't give up all my businesses. I make more money doing that than becoming the president of the Lakers. So you know that I'm going to be in and out. Is that okay with you? She said, yes. I said, do I have the power to make decisions? Because that was important for me to take the job as well. She said, you have the power to make the decisions.
So let me see if I have this straight. When Jeannie Buss came to you about being president of the Lakers, you said, quote, I'm going to be in and out. Is that okay with you? And now you're claiming that Rob Pelinka betrayed you and stabbed you in the back because he said that you were in and out of the office. The very thing that you demanded before you took that job. A job that Jeannie Buss obviously should have never given you in the first place. I mean, I'm not sure what's more insane about that. The idea that you wanted to run an NBA team as a part-timer, or that Jeannie Buss signed off on you running an NBA team as a part-timer. I'm not sure who looks worse. You wanting the title and the paycheck, but not the responsibility, or Jeannie saying, cool, Traj, you just do you. Man, no wonder everybody around the league is laughing at the Lakers. This is like the funniest bleep ever. The Showtime Lakers were never this cool, never this entertaining. How could the alleged greatest Laker ever know any less about the business of basketball? Let me see if I have this straight, Irv. You were going to run down Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, and the Warriors working a few days a week. You think Neil O'Shea or Sam Presti or Daryl Morey are, quote, going to be in and out because they've got other businesses they're working on? Man, no wonder Pelinka was bent. You weren't around. And best of all was Irv telling the LA Times, yes, when I talked about being stabbed in the back, initially I did not say who it was, but it was Pelinka. He told the LA Times, quote, so that's who I was talking about when I said backstabber. Just, you got to be a stand-up guy, a stand-up person. If you've got a problem with me or something I'm doing, just come and tell me, end quote. Right. Just like you told Jeannie Buss you were going to quit before you did it. Just like you told LeBron, the guy you signed, that you were going to quit before you did it. Because that's what a stand-up guy does. He looks the people around him in the eye and he has the hard conversation. Oh, that's right. You didn't do any of that. You told the media you were quitting before you told your boss. You told the media you were quitting before you told the face of the franchise who you brought in and signed to a four-year deal. And now you're on national TV crying about betrayal as you take a blowtorch to the team that you say you love so much on the day that they're announcing their new head coach. Traj. You know, there is a word to describe that type of thing. Actually, a few. Hypocritical, myopic, and most of all, tragic. Again, the hell were you looking to accomplish by showing up the way you did yesterday? If you were hoping that the media circus was going to clear your name, it didn't. That was embarrassing and selfish. Magic was looking to save his own rep, even if it meant burning the organization that he says he loves right to the ground. So, Jeannie Buss looks bad for hiring him and agreeing to such a ridiculous employment plan and for having Linda Rambis right below Traj on the org chart. And the Lakers as an organization look terrible that all this happened on the day that they were introducing their new head coach. And Magic saying, well, I agreed to do the interview weeks ago. What a coinkydink. In other words, Magic gonna Magic, Lakers gonna Laker. And you know it's tragic if they're going to bump the Warriors out of the top spot the way they just did.
If you're going to talk betrayal, it's only with Rob.
It's only with Rob. But you know he walked off that set like, yeah, man, that's a, handle that. That should clear everything up. Got my name back. Now they know. Now they understand. It takes more than hard work to make it to the pros. It also takes smarts. You know, the kind of smarts that can read a defense and then pick it apart. Hiring is no different. You need smarts to find the right people, but you don't need to spend years honing your game. You simply need ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job. Try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/clones. That's ziprecruiter.com/CLONES. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Chris Mannix is my guest. Chris, how you holding up, bro?
I'm good, Jim. How you doing?
Good, man. I'm great. I know you've got a lot going on. What with two conference finals? You got a heavyweight title fight. Magic doing whatever the hell Magic is doing. In fact, how busy are you right now?
Pretty busy. I'm in Toronto for game four tonight. Back to New York next week for Anthony Joshua's fight. I think we all saw what Deontay Wilder did, and we're all dying to see Anthony Joshua face him at some point this year. So it keeps you busy, that's for sure.
All right, so why don't we just go right there? I was going to start with some boxing, but let me follow you. What would a Deontay Wilder-Anthony Joshua fight, how big would that be, and what would that mean for boxing?
It's the biggest fight that can be made in boxing today, and it's not even close. It's the biggest heavyweight fight this century, and I'm not sure there's a very close second. You're talking about the undisputed heavyweight championship between two guys that are, I think, equally powerful. Maybe you can say Wilder, because of the angles he throws from, is a little more powerful, but Joshua's got an extraordinary knockout percentage as well, and equally questionable with their chins. I mean, Wilder has been buckled before. Go back to the Luis Ortiz fight for a recent example of it. Joshua has been down. Vladimir Klitschko put him down in their fight before ultimately getting knocked out. So you have two guys with massive power and shaky chins going up against each other in a fight that I wouldn't put a nickel on, not a nickel to bet on, because I don't know which way it's going to go. That to me screams huge fight, and I really hope they get a deal done.
Okay, that was my next point, Chris. Do you think that fight happens, or is there a risk that there might be a Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe situation?
You know, I don't think it would be Lewis Bowe in that they never fight each other, but I think, unfortunately, we could be in for an extended delay. We all know the situation with the promoters. Deontay is an Al Heyman guy. Eddie Hearn promotes Anthony Joshua. The network affiliations, Showtime and Fox for Wilder, DAZN for Joshua. And people have said to me on social media, well, why can't they do a Showtime HBO type of deal like we saw with Pacquiao Mayweather? That just doesn't work, because both these networks, DAZN and Showtime, have different business models. Showtime wants to do a pay-per-view, which is essentially a one-off cash grab. DAZN doesn't do pay-per-views. In fact, anybody that knows anything about DAZN knows that they've been saying over and over again that pay-per-view is dead, that they're doing things differently with their monthly subscription-based service. So you can't do a joint thing. What it's going to take, I think, is for after the Joshua fight, for DAZN to put so much money on the table that Wilder can't turn it down. I talked to Shelley Finkel, who's Wilder's co-manager, about this, and he told me that there was a number that DAZN could get to, and there was a type of contract that DAZN could offer that Wilder would accept for a Joshua fight. Let's hope it's reasonable enough to get Wilder there.
Chris Mannix joining us on the program. The sport definitely needs that fight. All right, so back to basketball. Golden State's back in the NBA Finals. They've got some time off, Chris, before the Finals. How would you compare this Warriors team to the ones that came before it?
Well, it's different than the ones that had Kevin Durant, because, you know, Kevin Durant was a singular superstar, you know, doing incredible things. And, you know, as this narrative, Jim, that's out there that I see all over the place, that maybe the Warriors are better without, it's just nonsense. I mean, Kevin Durant, first of all, he was great in the first two rounds of the playoffs, and he's been great in the last two finals. He has been the overriding reason that Golden State has won these back-to-back championships. But they're a different team without him. They clearly play more fluidly. Draymond Green just seems to be more energized when he has a bigger role out there on the floor. I tell you, watching Draymond, Jim, I've been among the people that have said that the Warriors should think about trading Draymond this offseason. He's coming up onto a contract year. He can be a free agent in 2020. He's going to want a big number, and he has looked like a depreciating asset over the last year or so. I mean, his three-point shooting has cratered this year. Defensively, when you talk to scouts, they say he's still great at defending fours, but doesn't defend threes and fives the way he once did with such skill in years past. But after watching Draymond just do what he did, if Kevin Durant winds up leaving, it might be wise to try to extend Draymond and keep him around long-term because of how well he plays alongside Steph Curry. So they're certainly a different team. I don't know if they're better yet because I think the finals will present a tough test, but they're certainly a different team without Kevin Durant.
Chris Mannix joining us. You know, that criticism of Draymond, I think, throughout the regular season, Chris, I think that's fair. But in the postseason, he's leaned out once again. He's focused. He's dialed in. I mean, I've never seen the guy play better. I think Steph Curry looks as good as he's ever looked as well. So they're not better without Kevin Durant. They're just different. Chris Mannix joining us. You mentioned Game 4 of the Bucks and Raptors. That's tonight. It's not like either team put on a clinic in Game 3. So how do you think they both show up this evening?
You know, hard to say because you're right. Game 3 was ugly. I mean, a double overtime, I don't know what word you'd use to describe it. It wasn't a thriller. It wasn't really a slugfest. It was just two teams that didn't play great basketball, and Toronto wind up getting the better of it. The Bucks starting lineup, I would imagine, will be a lot better in Game 4. Virtually no one in that starting lineup played well, including Giannis, who had his worst game of the postseason. I think he's going to play a lot better. The health of Kawhi, I think, is a variable in all this. I mean, he looked like he was dragging that leg around, Jim, in the minutes he played. He played 52 minutes in that game. I'm interested to see what he looks like coming out of the gate. They made a really good lineup switch, not a change, but a lineup switch when they put Kawhi on Giannis to start the game. I think that did a lot to take Giannis out of his rhythm, and the double teams they sent were really effective. We'll see if that changes in this series, but I do think it's very evenly matched. I mean, Milwaukee looked great in winning those first two games, but this series has been and continues to be a coin flip to me. I think the Raptors, who are great at home, can come out and win big if they need to on the game tonight, and that puts a lot of pressure on a young Milwaukee team that doesn't have a lot of guys that have been to this stage before. That puts a lot of pressure on them to go back home and get things done in Game 5. So this is the type of series that I think very easily could go 6-7 games.
Chris Mannix joining us for a few moments, talking basketball and boxing. So, Chris, obviously Magic Johnson goes on First Take, takes a blowtorch to the Laker organization, one that he professes to love so much. What do you make of his comments?
I mean, I don't know what he was thinking. And if you're Jeannie Buss, it's got to be two strikes and you're out. I mean, you quit without telling you her a month ago, and now, by all accounts, you know, in a shocking way, you go on ESPN and you just napalm your entire organization, and you peel back the curtain and effectively confirm every report that's been out there about the dysfunction within your team. Now, there are a lot of things I think he's right about. There are way too many cooks in the kitchen in Los Angeles, and there are way too many people not qualified to be advising on high-level basketball decisions having a voice in this. I couldn't pick Linda Rambis out of a lineup. I don't know what she's doing having any sort of influential role in basketball decisions. Kurt Rambis has had a long basketball career, but it hasn't been a successful basketball career. I don't know if you want him making those decisions. Rob Pelinka should be making all the calls. You know, at this point, if you're investing in Rob, he should be your guy. And look, I think that Rob has some stuff to answer for, especially when it comes to free agent decisions and the style of play the Lakers played last year. But the draft's been pretty good. I mean, Lonzo Ball's a good player. Kyle Kuzma was a great pick. Josh Hart was a great pick. You got to give Rob Pelinka credit for that. But they've got to settle things down. This team has the potential to explode by midseason. If they don't get a guy, an Anthony Davis or a marquee free agent this summer, it could get really ugly really fast. They have to find a way to make it clear from now until whenever that Rob Pelinka is the man making decisions. And that has to extend to the coaching bench where Frank Vogel has to get that support. Jim, I'm a huge Frank Vogel supporter. I think Frank Vogel is much more the coach we saw in Indiana for 5.5 years than the guy we saw for 2 years in Orlando. Orlando was a mess. His front office got fired after year one. I think he's much more the coach we saw coach the Pacers to a pretty high level, but he needs support. You can't let the rumors of a Jason Kidd take over the team by midseason. You can't let some of the stuff that will go on behind the scenes infect the locker room and create the perception that Frank Vogel is not the guy for your group. He needs to be supported. Rob Pelinka needs to support it. They need to speak with one voice in the front office and one voice in the coaching bench. And that's the only way this team has a chance to be successful.
So just one thought. It's a great point, but do you think that's realistic? I mean, they've gone from one chaotic moment to the next. Do you see any end in sight, or is this just who they are and the way it's going to be for quite some time?
No, of course it's not realistic. I mean, this is going to end, you know, in a disaster. I mean, I just can't see how all the things I said that need to happen actually happen. I just don't. I mean,
or any of them.
I don't. I just don't. I mean, there's just too many people that believe they should have a voice in basketball decisions. And Jim, you know the NBA. That's not how it works. The successful teams, they speak with one voice at the top. Of course, there's collaboration. Every team has collaboration. You need that. A GM is not a king. He shouldn't be making all decisions without consulting everybody else. But once he gets all the information, Sam Presti, Greg Popovich in consultation, really, with R.C. Buford, Masai Ujiri, Bob Myers, these top-tier GMs, they make the decisions. And everybody knows it. I don't know who is really making the decisions right now within the Laker organization. And really the most crazy thing that came out of that crazy Magic Johnson interview was that he asked for, and he said when he took the job, that he wanted to be basically a part-time team president, but he still wanted final say over basketball decisions. I don't know what's crazier, Jim, that Magic Johnson thought it was okay to ask for that, given this climate, or the Lakers for giving it to him. I mean, you have to spend every hour of every day, really, looking for the next top talent. You have to look at the mid-majors, like the Blazers did, with Lillard and McCollum, who are great young players who flew under the radar for a while. Find them. You got to look to Greece for those 6'9 stringy kids playing in crappy leagues like Giannis was. You have to look for these guys every day of the year, and Magic didn't have that type of investment, and the Lakers knew it, and they still gave him final say on personnel decisions. That, to me, suggests a franchise that just doesn't know what it's doing.
Right, and there is one other guy too, David Griffin. David Griffin was available. They could have had that guy and let him get away too.
Well, Jim, the bigger issue with this is that to the Lakers, everyone was available.
Right,
like they
everyone.
Could have written a check. They could have written a check to Sam Presti or R.C. Buford or Bob Myers for $20 million and probably gotten them. Like there really wasn't a limit to the number of guys the Lakers could have gone after and probably could have had. Instead, they elected to do what they always do, which is keep things within the Laker family and run it like a family business as opposed to a real one.
Contractors can rely on Ferguson to provide a winning game plan for any job, any day. Thanks to their pro pickup service, you can choose from thousands of products to order online and then pick it up in the store. That makes doing business with Ferguson the easiest part of your day. Let's talk Golden State for a minute. So they're going back to the NBA Finals for a fifth straight year. First team in more than a half a century to do that. You know, it's kind of easy to take these guys for granted. Kind of easy to just write the Warriors into the finals in June every single year. But that doesn't mean that it's not impressive, because it sure as hell is. As an example, Jordan's Bulls never did this. Neither did Bird Celtics or Magic's Lakers. Although Magic and the Lakers, of course, are a whole nother story right now. Actually, a better story than Golden State, given how embarrassing and hilarious Irv was and is. But Golden State did it, and they did it by sweeping Portland, and they closed it out with last night's 119-117 win in OT. Now, that last night was not supposed to happen. Not last night. Not with Golden State down another starter. Not with Golden State down 17 points again. When Andre Iguodala couldn't go last night, this one had gentleman sweep written all over it. You know, coasting game four, finished off in Oakland in game five, especially when Myers Leonard went off in the first half. My guy was a monster. Launching threes, check.
He dribbles, kicks it out to Myers, steps aside, launches a three, and he hits another one! Myers Leonard, a new career high in any game. He's got 25, and the Blazers lead by 12.
Blazers radio, you heard that. A new career high in any game. And that was in the postseason last night. The guy was doing it all. Throwing it down on a breakaway, check.
He has it knocked out of his hands by McCollum and picked up. Here's a long outlet to Dame. Dame on the other end, giving it to Myers, cutting. He's up and throws it down. Oh, Myers, where have you been all my life? He's got 30 points for the first time.
There was even a Myers Leonard chant that broke out in Portland. And it was awesome. because this guy was unconscious. 25 points, 5 of 6 from deep at halftime. This guy went from not playing in 5 games in this playoff run to putting up 30 and 12 in a game where Portland had its back up against the wall. And Portland was smashing Golden State again. We've read that script before. You know, the one where a team is up 3-0, they're down a starting player, they're down double digits on the road, they decide to shut it down. Rest, recover, get ready for game 5, finish it there. But that's not what Golden State did. They refused to give in when any other team in that situation would have. I mean, really, the series called for it. Portland deserved a win. Damian Lillard deserved another game in Oakland. But Golden State was not going to oblige. Wouldn't let them have it. In case you forgot, the Warriors aren't just good, they're tough as hell. They just swept the Western Conference Finals, and they did it without Kevin Durant. They came back from down 17 in Game 2, down 18 in Game 3, down 17 again last night. And it's not about Portland. It's about Golden State. The mental and physical toughness of that team. It's about Steph Curry, who to me has never looked better. A lot are saying that that was Steph Curry's best playoff series ever, and it might have been. 37, 12, and 11. A triple-double last night. I mean, he really did play one of the best series you'll ever see from anybody, and he did it with a jacked-up digit. And in a game that they really did not have to have. Curry played the entire second half and OT. That's how badly they wanted that game. That's how badly they wanted to end that series last night. And again, I can't stress this enough. Most teams mail it in there. Most teams fall behind 17 and they say, screw it. They shut it down. They get ready for game 5. But not with Curry playing the way he did, and not with Draymond Green doing what he did. Draymond also went for a triple-double, 18, 14, 11. And he was coming off maybe the best game of his career in Game 3. And then he backed it up and chased it with a monster Game 4. Afterwards, when asked exactly what that was about, Draymond summed it up like this.
You know, we just really understand what we're capable of on both sides of the basketball. And, you know, we're never out of the fight. And that's just always our mindset.
That's their mindset, and he had the biggest shot of the night in OT.
Trying to relocate, gets free, doubled immediately on the catch. Over to Draymond for 3, it's up and good! Draymond Green, 119-150, Golden State, and Portland wants time.
Warriors Radio, these guys are killers. They swept a very good Portland team. They did it without two starters for the entire series, and then a third from last night. You know, the team that was supposedly too tired, too busted up physically and mentally. The team that was supposedly too vulnerable without Kevin Durant. The team who had a bench they couldn't trust. The team with the chemistry that was allegedly off. Yeah, except that they didn't hear any of those hot takes. They didn't get that memo. Because neither Steph nor Draymond had played any better than they have the last few weeks. Too tired, too run down, too banged up. Nah, just too damn good. Too cold-blooded. About the only thing that surprised them was when Curry was walking to the locker room and somebody told him that he and Draymond were the first teammates to ever have triple-doubles in the same playoff game.
Steph, that was the first time teammates have had triple-doubles.
What?
You and Draymond.
No, ever?
Playoffs.
Wow. Find different stories on this 5-year journey, so... Got the win. I'm glad it's in a winning effort. Big time.
Steph's like, wait, what? Now they've got 9 days off, 10 days off, and then they should get Kevin Durant back. And they've proven once again, though, that they're the team to beat with or without Durant. And if Durant does bounce after the season, I'm not going to say they're better for it, but they'll be fine. Just like they were before he arrived. Because Steph Curry's never played better, neither has Draymond. And Curry is even more unselfish than anybody ever knew. And he was already the most unselfish superstar ever. He is Arash Markazi. Arash, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, how are you? Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you, bud. All right, so with the Lakers, there's huge news. They introduced Frank Vogel as their head coach, or at least Arash. It would have been huge news if Magic Johnson had not gone on TV and ripped into the organization. What do you make of what Magic said, and then how bad of a look was that for the Lakers?
It was perhaps, and again, they've had a lot of bad days. That was perhaps their worst day because, again, Magic made public what a lot of people have known for a while. When Magic Johnson talked about backstabbing and whispering, we kind of knew what he was saying. But he really went public to the depths of how bad the situation is right now with the Lakers, with Rob Pelinka, with Tim Harris, with the power structure that's currently there. And my goodness, I did not think they had a chance to land some of these big name guys, whether you go down the list of going talking about KD or Kawhi. I don't know how Rob Pelinka at this point can go into a recruiting meeting with a player with what Magic said, basically saying he's a backstabber and cannot be trusted. Again, one of the worst days in Lakers history, and they've had a ton recently.
Talking to Raj Markazi, you know, it's a really strong statement. Why do you think Magic did what he did?
I really think he doesn't like what's currently happening with the team, and there's a lot of people who are not putting their name to what's currently happening, whether it's the fact that Linda Rambis and Kurt Rambis and Joey and Jesse Buss and Tim Harris are now a part of these in terms of talking to Jeannie Buss about who should be the next coach or who they should sign. I think he just wanted to put his name to it and make it as public as possible in terms of what is happening with the team right now. But it's amazing coming from a man who is saying that he would like to help out the team this summer. I don't see how that's possible, and how he wants the team to land a big-name player. Again, with what he just said and the role that Rob Pelinka currently holds, I don't see how that's possible.
We're talking to Raj Markazi. I don't either. Now, for years, the impression had always been that Jeannie was the best choice of the Buss children to run the Lakers. And then when she fired her brother, it was seen as like this incredible power move and a demonstration of her commitment to winning. Kobe was texting her about being the mother of dragons. And then it all seemed to fall apart. What changed and what is going on with her?
I think the perception was Jeannie would come into power and do what her father, Dr. Jerry Buss, did, which is entrust people with a track record of success to succeed in their positions, whether that was Jerry West, whether that was Mitch Kupchak, he was going to allow them to succeed. I don't think we foresaw a scenario where she would hire two men who have never run a team before, who have never worked together to turn this thing around. Magic Johnson has never run a team. Rob Pelinka has never run a team. And by the way, they both wanted the power to run the show. And what's amazing to me, Jim, is that they've made the same mistake in the coaching staff. Frank Vogel wants to be the head coach and was named the head coach. Why are you putting Jason Kidd, who wanted to be the head coach, who's been a head coach, with him? They've never worked together. There's no loyalty there. And I guarantee you this the same thing happened with Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson will happen with Frank Vogel and Jason Kidd.
We're talking to Raj Markazi. I mean, go back to Magic and Pelinka. So, I mean, obviously they don't have that kind of background, but why didn't that relationship work?
There was no trust there. There was no prior history there. There was no commitment. Here was the problem. It was a failed relationship from Jump Street because Magic made it known, listen, I will take this job, but I also want you to know that I have things happening on the side. I got my companies. I got my corporate engagements. I still want to do that kind of stuff. At that point, that should have been a red flag for Jeannie to say, listen, Magic, we'd love to have you be a part of the team in some role. We can't have you be the president of the team. She wanted him to have that role so badly, she didn't care that he wasn't going to make this a full-time job for him. So what happens in that sense is Rob, who wants the power, is now going around telling people, where's Magic? I got to get this approved, but I can't find Magic. Have you seen Magic? So it was a doomed relationship from the start.
Raj, what's worse in your mind, not being 100% committed to a job in that capacity or Jeannie Buss being okay with the fact that he was not 100% committed?
They're both. You know, shame on Magic for taking the job. Shame on Jeannie for hiring him. They both are at fault. I am really amazed, though, that Jeannie has not brought in one person, and I'm not saying it has to be Jerry West. I'm not saying it has to be someone who's worked with the team before. Bring in one person with a track record of success who's run a team before. She has surrounded herself with people that she loves and respects, which is fine. This is the Los Angeles Lakers. This is not a job where this is your first time running a team. She would not hire a coach who's never coached before or bring in a player who's never played before. Why are you bringing in a GM who's never run a team before?
Arash Markazi joining us. All right, then go back to a point that you made earlier. If you're a big-time free agent this summer and you're looking at the Lakers as an organization and you're looking at their future, what kind of thoughts would you be having? How tough a job does Rob Pelinka have when it comes to recruiting players now?
It is an almost impossible task at this point to get one of those signature guys. And again, when you go down the list, it's a Kyrie, it's a Kawhi, it's KD. I don't see how he lands one of those big names. I think if he lands a big name, much like LeBron James, they will come here not because of Rob Pelinka, but because it's Los Angeles, it's Hollywood, it's the Lakers. And Jim, let me paint a picture for you. Across town, if you really want to play in Los Angeles, if you really want to have Hollywood, have a meeting and you got Jerry West, Steve Ballmer, and Doc Rivers walking through that door. And as two guys who grew up in Los Angeles, I would have never thought that I would sit here today and tell you the more stable franchise, the one with the more solid foundation, is the Clippers.
Never, ever, never would any of us have ever said that. And then, Arash, before you go, earlier in the Laker offseason, before the latest Magic mess, there was this notion being floated that some of the Lakers organization did not like the perception that LeBron had influence over the organization and that they might trade him as a result. How bad would that look for the Lakers to trade LeBron against his will, and could that ever happen?
He's not going to be traded, and Jim, as bad as things are now, and they're as bad as they could possibly be, they would be infinitely worse if you traded LeBron James against his will. He made this decision to come to Los Angeles, not for the Lakers, but because of the city, because of Los Angeles. He's got two homes here. He's got his companies here. His family's out here. He's going to retire here. Now, that doesn't mean he's checked out. He still wants to win. But he's not trying to chase one more ring in Toronto or someplace else. He wants to be here. So if the Lakers traded him against their will, they'd be doomed for at least another generation. Good luck getting one more superstar here when you've treated LeBron like that.
All right, Rosh, last thought. So if they keep him and they don't trade him, do they still have any path to getting Anthony Davis?
It doesn't seem like that the Pelicans want to trade with him. I will say that now that you brought in the number four pick and you look at that young package of players plus the draft picks, that's not a bad deal. Now, if they don't want to make that deal, they don't want to make that deal. But, Jim, unfortunately for them, I think their best path to getting a quasi-star player, you're looking at Kemba Walker or Jimmy Butler, good players, that makes you a playoff team that does not make you a championship contending team.
He is a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. He is a professor at USC. He is an L.A. legend and a longtime friend of the program, Arash Markazi. Arash, so good to have you back in the jungle. Thank you very much.
You're the best, Jim. Thanks so much.
It is summertime, and you know what the most annoying thing ever is? Flies, insects invading your home. Man, I hate that. Especially when you think where those flies were last. That fly just landed on your hamburger. Could have been anywhere at all. From another piece of food to... well, give it some thought. So, let me take a moment and thank my pals over at Dynatrap. Dynatrap is the leading manufacturer of outdoor mosquito and insect traps. And now they have come up with a solution for indoor pests. The Dynatrap Fly Light. The Dynatrap Fly Light works day and night to attract and trap flies, fruit flies, mosquitoes, other pesky insects. And I've got to say, it works. And never mind those disgusting fly strips. The Dynatrap Fly Light looks like a subtle nightlight that plugs into any indoor outlet. Trust me, I've been using mine for a couple of days now. I absolutely love it. It's insane the number of insects that it's caught that otherwise would be buzzing around my home, annoying the hell out of me. Get yours at Dynatrap.com. That's DynaTrap.com. Enter the promo code ROAM. Receive 15% off their products. Dynatrap, the safe, silent, simple solution to household insect control. Let's talk about Ezekiel Elliott. He's had a rather quiet offseason, or he had. He hit a small bit of turbulence as TMZ posted a video of the Cowboys running back getting cuffed in the parking lot of a Las Vegas music festival early Saturday morning. However, it's not just any music festival. It is the Electric Daisy Carnival, a.k.a. EDC, the corporate rave of the year. And since Zeke was cuffed at a rave, I think that I will double back to my lead and try it again with this. With the help of UC Santa Barbara's very own Steve Aoki. Here we go. Let me try it again. This time I'll do it right with the Gaucho. Ezekiel Elliott's rather quiet offseason has hit a small bit of turbulence.
We hit turbulence!
Much better. That's the sound of 130 Gaucho beats per minute. And the predominant sound of a 72-hour electronic dance music festival that ended for Zeke Elliott in handcuffs around 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. TMZ has got cell phone video that shows Zeke walking around the EDC parking lot in a LeBron James gamer, arguing with a woman who TMZ identifies as his girlfriend. As the video goes on and the argument continues, Zeke approaches an event staffer who is standing up against a portable steel barricade. In the video, you can hear Zeke say to the staffer, quote, "Got something to say?" And then Zeke leans in even closer, makes contact with the staffer, and the staffer falls backwards, taking the barricade down with him. So I'm showing this right now on CBS Sports Network. And for those of you who have not seen the video, let me say this. Look, I don't condone violence, but I also do not condone flopping. I mean, don't get it twisted. Zeke is a straight up fool for causing a scene, for putting himself in this position, especially given his past. Believe me, there's no one who needs this noise less than Ezekiel Elliott right now. But you pretty much could have whispered in that staffer's ear, and he was going to go down like he got hit in the head by a 2x4. So if you go looking for that video, expecting Zeke to straight drop somebody, prepare to be disappointed, because that is an all-time egregious flop. James Harden and Chris Paul can't believe how badly this dude embarrassed the game by hitting the deck the way he did. However, Elliott, given his track record, even putting himself in that position, even with the slightest bit of contact, is one of the dumbest things ever. Like, I don't know if that qualifies as a crime per se, but my guy should be arrested for stupidity in the first degree for even putting himself in that position. And sure enough, Metro Police fitted him with a pair of the silver bracelets. And I think that I speak for every warehouse raver rolling around in their 1990s grave right now when I say, dude, you're supposed to be fitted for candy bracelets, not handcuffs. Where's the plur, bro? Peace, love, unity, respect, the four governing principles of the underground rave community. Come on, man. Again, this guy's in the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong thing, and he put himself there. Per usual, bad choice, bad look. But given who we're dealing with, it could have been so much worse. It usually is. And the cops did release him without processing him, meaning it'll go down as a detainment and not an arrest. But just because he didn't spend a night in the can doesn't mean he gets it, because he doesn't. Not if he's getting cuffed at some gigantic rave with some tool following him around the parking lot capturing vid. Listen, I'll forgive anybody for one really bad night or for minding their own business but being in the wrong place at the wrong time. That happens to all of us, myself included. But this is not a one-off or one bad night. It's just another bad decision by Elliott, and it's only a matter of time before he makes yet another one. But since you were at the EDC, let me put this whole thing in terms that you can easily understand. Dubstep terms. Zeke, I understand you merely approached the staffer and asked if he had something to say. It's not like you threatened him and said, "Now you're going to die.
Now you're going to die."
I'll give you that, Zeke. I'll give you that. And I also understand that the guy did flop. And the guy was selling the contact, trying to draw the foul. And that there really is no reason for anybody to call 911 now. That said, Zeke, that said, instead of destroying them with verbal and physical intimidation, maybe you just head to the base pod stage and destroy that dance floor instead with lasers.
Destroy them with lasers.
Feel me, Zeke? You feel me? Because at the end of the day, the general public is going to read about you causing a problem, then look at your rap sheet and say to itself, it's another one. How do you not know? You're 3 years in and still making this kind of noise. It's going to have people thinking, man, he just can't stop.
I can't stop. I can't stop.
But you gotta, bro. You gotta stop. It's not a good look. Not a good look when the kids are rolling face on Molly and Moon Rocks, grinding their teeth, sucking on a pacifier, tripping out to glow stick shows, and they're leaving the venue without incident, but you're not. Be better, dude. Do better. You have to. And by be better, I mean stop going to raves. You've got no business being there. While everyone else is there to pop pressed pills and roll face, you're pressing up on staffers and getting fitted for silver bracelets. It's a bad look. Man, stay down. Stay in your shoes. Better yet, Zeke, just stay home. Just stay home. Just stay home or you're going to die.
And now you're going to die.
My guest is Kenan Lowe. Kenan, so nice to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It is really nice to have you. Before we talk about the events of the past few days, why don't we go back a little bit? I want to ask you about your time at Oregon under Chip Kelly and offensive coordinator Scott Frost. One of the things that you've said is in meetings, Scott Frost would talk about football, but he'd also talk about life. I'd love to start right there. What do you remember about those meetings?
Yeah, so Scott Frost was, I was a receiver there, so he was our receiver coach when I got there. And then obviously he transitioned to offensive coordinator later on in my career. So, yeah, in our receiver meetings, we talked life, like you said. We talked about football and then, to grow as a room and to teach us to grow as men. We also talked about life lessons. And, one of the things that I'll never forget is, we talked about emergency situations. And he talked about how, if you haven't made your mind up of what you would do in an emergency situation already beforehand, then it'd be too late when the moment arises. So we had those conversations, and I remember that, and that's kind of stuck in me, throughout, since we had that talk, and that must have been 2012. And it kind of, it showed up in my life this past week, and, I'm thankful for all the mentors, Chip Kelly and Scott Frost, and all my former coaches that have helped me to grow as a man.
We were talking to Kenan Lowe, and that really is something right there. I'm going to go back to that in a minute. But I want to say also, you were working in the NFL, and you could have continued to pursue that, but you wanted to be involved in high schools, and eventually you took a job at Park Rose High School with a football team that had lost 23 straight games. Why was that, and what was it about that opportunity that appealed to you the most?
Man, it was appealing because, I played football my whole life. Played at Oregon, played at a high level. We did some special things there when I was there. And then obviously was an assistant in the NFL for the 2 years. So after those 2 years, I felt like I wanted to take ownership of my career as a coach. And I saw the best route for me to grow as a head coach, because that's what I would like to do in the future, is to coach high school ball. You know, on the other side of it, I love to mentor and teach kids. So I felt like the impact that I could have on the community, on kids, would be felt the most as a high school coach. But also I could grow and find my own voice as a head coach in high school ball. You know, I do have plans to continue to coach and coach at a high level in the future. But right now I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and I'm enjoying where I'm at.
Now, Keenan, this is not a new thing. For instance, back in the day, one of your teammates at Oregon described you as someone who, quote, brings sunshine to the rain, end quote. Where does that attitude and that approach come from?
Man, I think it's just the way I grew up. You know, no one's life is easy, and I look back at my life, and it hasn't been easy. I've persevered through tough times and worked for everything that I've ever gotten, you know. So, you know, I've always, you know, figured out as a young age that it's all about that mentality that you have in your mind, you know, being positive and being able to attack things you know, and to grow. I've never been afraid of anything. I've never turned down a challenge, whether it's on the football field, in the classroom, or as a coach. So I think that got instilled in me as a young age, and obviously I've grown up, you know, to have those be my fundamental values.
Keenan Lowe is joining us. He's the Park Rose High School head football coach. So let's go to Friday right now, and I want to be very respectful about how we talk about this, because it's a very, very scary event. You were working on Friday, and you were radioed to a classroom in the Fine Arts Building to escort a student to the front office. The student was not there, so you were talking to a substitute teacher. Keenan, what happened next?
Yeah, so I'm talking to the substitute, and all of a sudden, the door just opens, and I'm right there. You know, I'm three feet from the door, basically within arm's length. You know, I turn to my right, and the door just opens, and there's a young man with a shotgun standing at the door. So everything, you know, from there, it happened so fast. I analyzed the situation really fast, looked at his face, eyes, saw it was a gun, saw the gun was real, and, you know, my instincts took over. I just reacted. You know, I lunged for the gun, got two hands on the gun, and then, you know, obviously all the students are running out of the classroom and kind of in hysteria, and, you know, I'm wrestling this kid with the gun, making sure the point of the gun isn't pointed towards the kids running, and making sure it's not pointed towards me. So obviously I end up winning that little wrestling match and call for another teacher to come grab the gun out of my hand and basically just hold the kid down and be with the kid until the police arrive.
Keenan Lowe is joining us. I think most people in that situation would certainly freeze, but you did not. Why not? How come?
Man, I don't think, you know, like I say, in life I've never flinched. I've never turned down a challenge. I've worked for everything I've gotten in my life. So in that moment where, you know, it takes someone not to flinch in order to make the difference, you know, I found myself, you know, being able to react and react on my instincts and trust myself and my judgment. So I think that's the reason why I didn't flinch. I never have in my life. And you know, moving forward, obviously, I never will.
Hmm. You know, eventually you forced the gun out of that student's hands, and then you subdued him. And something that you said, I think, is really profound. You didn't say it to me just now, but you kind of hinted at this. You said, quote, "At that point, I'm trying to care for him because I know what happens next for him. So I'm talking him down, essentially telling him it's going to be okay. I've got you. I'm here. We're okay," end quote. Again, I think most people in your situation would be filled with fear or rage or adrenaline or all of the above, but would not be trying to care for the student. How were you able to get to that place?
You know, I have a lot of compassion for kids growing up these days, especially, you know, high schoolers. They go through a lot just with the social media age, with the, you know, access to weapons, with the bullying and everything that's just happening in our country with young people. So I have a lot of compassion. So in that moment, I mean, that's just who I am as a person. So once there was no threat, once I, you know, eliminated the threat, you know, my natural instinct was to just care for the young man. As a young person, you make decisions that you know, you don't necessarily know what you're doing until after it's done. So, you know, I got the opportunity to kind of be with him for about 3 or 4 minutes and just talk to him. Like I said, told him I was there for him. Told him I was there for a reason, that I was there to save him as long as, you know, as well as the other kids in the classroom.
Keenan Lowe is joining us. And then last night you were honored at the Blazers game. Damian Lillard invited you to game three, and you were there for game four. You received a standing ovation. I mean, very clearly, you're not looking to make this about you. So how does it feel when people call you a hero?
You know, honestly, it does feel good. It does feel good, and it feels good that the Blazers organization, you know, reached out to me and kind of looked out for me this past couple days. And, you know, it feels good. I think I was just put in the right place at the right time. The universe put me there for a reason, and that was to save those kids, but also to save that young man that had the gun. I'm just thankful that everything worked out the way it was. I'm thankful that I'm okay. I'm thankful that everybody's okay and that we walked away without a tragedy happening.
Keenan, to that point, I understand what you're saying, and yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody's so thankful for that. I also understand that the way you were brought up and the things that you know, the things you have learned, I think maybe it prepared you, your entire life prepared you for that moment. But had it not gone that way, it would have been a very different story. What's it like when you hear that or think about that? Like, had you not done what you did?
Yeah, and that was my message to the students yesterday at school was, you know, you can get hung up on the what ifs of the whole situation. What if I was too slow? What if I was too fast? What if this? What if that? And then you just got to bring it back down to reality and look at the facts of the situation. And the facts of the situation is that nobody got hurt. The young man, you know, was saved by me. I didn't get hurt. No students got hurt. And we walked away without a tragedy happening. Yeah, we're in the national news, but we're in the national news. You know, it could be a lot worse.
So what was it like when you went back to school yesterday? Can you explain some of the emotions that you must have been feeling when you went back to school?
Yeah, I went back to school for the kids. You know, I thought it would be good for them to be able to see me and to be able to, you know, show me love and give me hugs. So there was a whole bunch of hugs, a whole bunch of love going around from, you know, the whole student body and staff. And, you know, it really did feel good because I wouldn't have signed up to work at a high school and work even security for a high school if I didn't care about the young people in that school and in this community that I live in. So, you know, I'm thankful for the community. I'm thankful that I had the opportunity to be a part of that community and be their head coach in track and football and to work inside that school. Man, I really love those kids and love this school.
And then finally, to be a part of the community is certainly one thing, and you've done that, but there's a bigger picture here. You tweeted, quote, "I'm blessed to be alive and extremely happy that the students are safe. I'm not sure what's next. I haven't had the time to really think about it, but I am sure that I want to be a part of the solution to school gun violence," end quote. Again, it's very early on, but do you have a sense as to what kind of role that you want to take in being part of that solution?
Like you said, it is very early, and I'm working through a whole bunch of things right now. But, you know, I think the first and foremost, we have to admit that there is a problem, right? There is a problem with access to guns and with young people and with the mental health issues that are going around right now in the social media age. There is a problem. And I think it starts with admitting that there's a problem. And then I think the next step is, you know, how easy are these weapons accessed at home by children? You know, what are the laws that you know that you have to follow if you have a gun? Do you have to lock it up? Are there laws that you know make you have to lock your guns up and whatnot? So I think that's the starting point. Again, I'm working through a lot of stuff, sifting through a lot of information, and talking to a lot of people right now. I'm excited for kind of this to die down and for me to be able to take those steps forward and be a voice for that school gun violence issue.
Keenan Lowe, former University of Oregon wide receiver, a former offensive analyst with the Eagles and 49ers, a football coach, track and field coach, security guard at Park Rose High School in Portland, Oregon, and a legitimate hero. My man, I can't thank you enough. I think I speak for everybody who's listening right now. An absolutely powerful and amazing story. And it is so nice to have you on the show. Nice to meet you, Keenan. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you having me, man. Thanks.
Let's go to San Antonio. Gino in San Antonio. Gino, how are you?
Man, I'm real good, Rome. I just wanted to call in because, you know, we're all quick to call in and crack on Chael or, you know, just have fun making fun of each other. But when you bring on a story like that one you just brought on, it really gives you reason to pause and just be blown away by this guy. I mean, in the moment, we all would hope that we would respond like that, but you don't know. You do not know how you're going to respond. Are you going to run to trouble? Or are you going to run away from trouble and save yourself? Neither one of these choices are bad choices. One of them obviously had life-saving consequences by running to trouble. But not that wasn't even what blew me away, because, you know, we would all hope that we would do that. But then in the moment, with the adrenaline flowing, to have the compassion he had, I come from a long line. Many people in my family are first responders. And in that moment, it is very hard to respond the way Keenan Lowe responded. That is the true measure of a man. We use the phrase man's game around the jungle pretty loosely. But you know what? Keenan Lowe, man's game, my brother.
Good job, Gino. Thank you very much. That's how you elevate the conversation.
Good night now.